Well, I want to say Breshus Rabbi Chalap, Breshus Rabbi Mari Rav Shechter, Breshus Rabbi Mari Rabbi Willig, and all the Rabbanim Chashuvim Khan. It's a special privilege to be here today to speak about these issues relating to Beit Din. I want to make it clear that this injury is not a result of an angry litigant. It's unrelated, but not that this is something which is impossible in the course of the work that we do at the Beis Din. There are all kinds of risks and perils. But in any event, my purpose today really is to give a little bit of background to some of the halacha lema'aseh, some of the practical aspects of running a Beit Din in modern times, in contemporary society, in the world that we live today. The Beit Din of America, where I serve as the director, Rabbi Willig serves as the Sagana Beit Din, is a Beit Din that is affiliated with the Rabbinical Council of America. It has many dayonim who are associated and affiliated with the Yeshiva University, and is a Beit Din that many people in our community are certainly familiar with and go to whenever there's an issue of a commercial case or a matrimonial case, a get issue or a din Torah issue that needs to be brought to Beit Din. Rav Shechter went over many of the halachic issues that are involved in running a Beit Din, including the issue of jurisdiction of Beit Din Bizman Hazeh. We'd just like to flesh this out a little bit in terms of actual applications and actual examples. In terms of the concept of Shlichus Ayu, the Shulchan Aruch, if you take a look in Siman Aleph of Chosha Mishpat, talks about what does it mean that nowadays we can still function and have Bate Din, which we're supposed to have in every single generation, every single door, we're supposed to have Bate Din, so therefore we serve as the agents of the Smuchin, of the Dayanim HaSmuchin, who came beforehand, with during the time that there was the time of Smicha, so we're Shlichus Ayu Dekamai Kavdinan, we serve in that purpose. So the Shulchan Aruch talks about how Shlichus Ayu really doesn't apply necessarily in every single case. When this special rishus, this special extension was given for Dayanim nowadays to be able to adjudicate cases, this was only in the realm of things which relate to monetary damages that commonly occur, what we call but if it's something which is not commonly occurring, like you have certain types of damages, nezikin and the like, which are not everyday occurrences, so we don't necessarily say shlichus ayu. What this doesn't mean, the Mefarshim explained, this doesn't mean that these matters, which are not your normal run-of-the-mill, shall we say, loan transactions or Yerusha transaction, Yerusha matters and other things that happen in everybody's life in everyday practice, when these other matters that are less common occur, it doesn't mean that if two Jews have a dispute, let's say breaks somebody's arm, for somebody's wrist, that it doesn't have to go to the Beis Din. Every single matter has to go to Beis Din. It's just a question of to what extent is Beis Din authorized to apply the actual letter of Torah law. We say that in other matters, Beis Din has no choice. There's actually no prerogative of Beis Din to function other than to say, well, mi'ikar adin, if we would have jurisdiction, we would be mechayev you such and such. Like, for example, in areas of Knas, since nowadays we can't be done, for example, when it comes to Knas, we can't be done, with example, to things which are not Shkiach, we can't say that you're chayev exactly this amount, but we can tell you that it's an appropriate thing that you should pay more or less this amount, because that's the amount that you would have to pay under normal circumstances. So therefore, we'll tell you that it should be close to this range. We had a case in the Beis Din of America where we had a Tohen who wanted, not that we allow Tohenim to appear in our Beis Din, but sometimes people write us letters from their Tohenim. I have an article that circulated about why we don't allow Tohenim in the Beis Din of America. So the person's Tohen wrote us an extensive letter about, I think the case was that the person was riding on a bicycle and the bicycle hit some sort of obstacle in the road of this guy's bungalow colony, and therefore he broke some limbs and he wanted to sue the owner of the bungalow colony. So one of the arguments was that this somehow or other came under the category of an area of halacha that's not subsumed under shlichus silas. Machlokas achronim. It's a question how to be magdir for Baba Kama purposes, what the precise nezek was. You say niske bor is a machlokas achronim, whether shlichus sai applies to niske bor. So he had a whole lumnus as to whether shlichus sai would apply in this case, and he was justifying his claim that his client was entitled to adjudicate the case in court as opposed to Beis Din on the basis of saying the Shlichus Sayu was not pertinent in this case. Based on his analysis of the various shitas in Shulchan Aruch and Achronim and so forth, that Shlichus Sayu didn't apply in this case, and therefore there was a heter gomer to take the place to court, to take the case to court. So this is not so. That's not what Shlichus Sayu, what the parameters of Shlichus Sayu are about. The parameters of Shlichus Sayu more refer to the question as to whether the Beis Din has the ability to apply the actual halach in such a case, or whether Beis Din has to come up lechatzchila, or even b'dieved, with doing no more than a pshara. But in any case where there's a dispute between two Jews, obviously it has to go to Beis Din. What the two areas that we deal with in terms of Beis Din jurisdiction. And this is from my lawyer background. I'm used to, when I used to work in a law firm, I was used to drafting documents where there would be two clauses at the very end of every single document, every contract that people would enter into. There are two clauses that would always appear at the end of every single document. One was a choice of law provision, and one was a choice of jurisdiction provision. The choice of law provision would be a provision whereby the two parties would agree with each other what law would apply to their transaction. So it would say at the end of the contract, it would be a loan agreement, a mortgage, whatever, say the parties agree that New York law shall apply to this transaction. That was sure. They would say, or Maryland law shall apply, or Canadian law. They would have a choice of law provision. Then there would be another provision called the choice of jurisdiction provision, where the parties would say, we agree that if there is any dispute between us, we shall refer such dispute for resolution or adjudication to the courts of the state of New York, or to the courts of the state of New Jersey. Or they would have a clause that would say, we refer the dispute to the arbitration of the following panel of people that we agree to accept upon ourselves to judge and adjudicate this case. So whenever we have any kind of matter that's submitted to the Beis Din, the first thing that we have to look at is what choice of law provisions apply to this case and what choice of jurisdiction provisions apply to this case. We know we were discussing the halacha lifneim lo lifnei akum as a general rule. You can't go to the secular courts, but what choices do you have in terms of going to Beis Din, or what Beis Din you go to? Or under what circumstances can you go to an entity which isn't a Beis Din? Or under what circumstances can you stipulate that you don't want halacha to apply in a particular transaction? So focusing, first of all, on choice of jurisdiction provisions. When it comes to where a dispute has to be adjudicated, already you find in Rabbi Akiva Eger at the beginning of Choshen Mishpat, Simin Gimel, quotes a Rashach who says that if there is a minhag, let's say that there is a custom among various sochrim, among various business people, that that all disputes that arise within their business industry, let's say they're in the securities industry or they're in the construction industry, all the people who build homes, and they have, and there's a dispute between the contractor and the person who owns the property, that they agree that that there is a minhag, there's a custom that all disputes that would ever arise go to an arbitration board of three people who are well versed in the law, in the practices and customs of construction. And if there's a dispute over how much should be paid or what the quality of the work was, then they would just go to this blue ribbon panel of people who are familiar in the construction industry, and they would submit to the decision of that panel. So the question is that a violation of our codes? Is that a violation of going to the secular courts? So Rabbi Akiva Eger says, no, if that's the practice that everybody goes to this group of people, they're not a secular court. They're not applying a legal system which is negative, which is against the halakha. There's just an industry practice. There's a standard in the, there's a custom in the, in that particular commercial field as to how things get done. And this is what we call an ad hoc arbitration panel. it is permissible to go to any kind of ad hoc arbitration panel. It's what the Gemara refers to as Akol Shebisurya. It's sometimes you just gather a few people together and you say, we have a dispute and we'd like you to help resolve the dispute. And certainly if there are people who are experts in the industry, and the minhag is, the custom is, that these people always adjudicate the dispute, and they don't do so as representatives of the secular court system, then it's perfectly appropriate to go to them, either if the parties expressly stipulate they'll go to such a panel, or even if that's just the community custom. The Rebbe Kivega says that both parties are bound by what we call the minhag hasochem, by the community custom. The Tzitz Eliezer has a similar tshuva about a place in Israel where there was a condominium development and a homeowners association, and it was always the practice, it was put in the bylaws of the association, that if there were ever any disputes between different members of the community about rights to various streets or to yards or to various rights and privileges within the condominium, if there was ever any dispute that would arise, they would submit that dispute to the homeowners association, to an arbitration panel of the homeowners association. And he dealt with the question, is that a violation of not going to Bezdin? And say no, because it's not a requirement to go to Bezdin if there is a custom that people go to an arbitration panel of experts in a particular area, as long as it's not under the imprimatur, as long as it's not under the aegis of the secular court system. So that's one issue. We had one case where there was a very big dispute between two people over a construction job that was done in a major Jewish institution. We're talking about a dispute for over $100,000, a very contentious dispute between the two parties, and they were fighting for a long time. Are they going to go to Bezdin? They're not going to go to Bezdin. And then somebody at one point pulled out the contract between the two parties, and the contract says, it's a standard construction contract they entered into, which says if there's ever a dispute that arises between the two parties, they agree that they will go to the arbitration association of the construction industry experts, or whatever the lashon was, and the question that was posed to the Bezdin was, is this enforceable, or would that be a violation? So the answer was, that was enforceable, that was fine. In such a case, it would be permissible to go to such a panel of experts. But in the event, in such a case does appear before the Bezdin, obviously the Bezdin also has to take the minhag hasochem into consideration if you're ever dealing with that sort of situation. Now, what happens if it's a case where the parties agree that, where it's clear that the halacha requires that the parties have to go to Bezdin? It's a standard monetary dispute where the parties are supposed to go to Bezdin, but they can't agree on what Bezdin to go to. One of them wants to go to Bezdin A, and the other one says, I don't like Bezdin A, I want to go to Bezdin B. So the halacha is, if you have in the city a Bezdin Kavua, if you have in a particular population a Bezdin that was accepted by all the people in that population as the Bezdin to adjudicate all affairs, then one party can't opt out of the Bezdin Kavua. There's a Bezdin Agudel somewhere in certain cases, but as a general rule, you can't opt out of the Bezdin Kavua in the city. So the question is, do we have Bismanazer Bezdin Kavua? If somebody says, I want to go to Bezdin of America, and the other party says, I don't want to go to Bezdin of America, can we say the Bezdin of America is that you have no choice? The Bezdin of America is the Bezdin. New York City, there's no other Bezdin like us. It may be true, but do we have the right to say, as a result, this is the Bezdin Kavua, everybody's obligated to go to our Bezdin? There is a halacha that the Gemara in Sanhedrin, Daf Lamed Beis Amud Beis, says that one interpretation of Tzedek Tzedek Tirdof is Holech Achar Bezdin Yafa, that a person is obligated not just to go to a Bezdin, you have to go to Bezdin Yafa. You have to make sure that it's not just that it's Tzedek, it's an honest Bezdin, it's a proper Bezdin, it's a Bezdin with integrity. But let's assume that you have more than one Bezdin that's an honest Bezdin, that's a Bezdin of integrity. So you have more than one option of a Bezdin Yafa that's available. One person chooses one Bezdin Yafa, and the other person chooses another Bezdin Yafa. So the halacha of Moshe writes, for Moshe Feinstein, Igros Moshe writes, that at least in the city of New York, he thinks that nobody, there's never been a vote. They tried at one time to have a cohesive community in New York where everybody would be under one rabbinic authority, and there would be a cohesive population. They brought in a chief rabbi at one point. He lasted maybe a week before he was not respected by the entire population. So in New York, you don't really have this kind of cohesiveness where everybody got together and they voted that they're going to accept upon themselves one Bezdin. So therefore, Rav Moshe writes that in New York City, there's no Bezdin Kavua. So what do you do when there's no Bezdin Kavua? So when there's no Bezdin Kavua, we know Perek Zeborer, that if the parties can't agree on a Beis Din, then the situation converts to one of Zabla. What does Zabla mean? Zabla means that each person chooses one Dayan, and those two Dayanim choose a third Dayan. So that sounds very good in principle, but the Rosh already wrote that we have a major problem with what happens with many Zablas, and Moshe alluded to this, in that a person, if I select someone as a Dayan, that doesn't mean that this Dayan is supposed to be my advocate. It doesn't mean that the Dayan is supposed to already make up his mind that he's going to decide in my favor. It means I'm confident that this Dayan is a person of thoroughness and integrity, and if there's anything in my case which could possibly enable me to prevail, this Dayan is not going to miss it. But it does. Presumably the Dayan also is going to see what the merits of the other person's case is, and the Dayan can very well come to the conclusion that after looking at all the merits in favor of my case and all the merits in favor of the other person's case, that the other person should prevail and not me. The Dayan is not supposed to be partial to me. The Piskei Tshuva already notes that there's this very strange phenomenon that people pick a borer in a Zabla setting. They pick a Dayan to represent them, and then they have all these ex parte, all these communications with the Dayan outside of the Din Torah, outside of the other party, outside of the other Dayanim. This is Shmuel. You're not supposed to have ex parte communications. That's a violation of a halakha. It could be a din d'oraisa. So he points out that there's some very strange violations with respect to what goes on in Zablus. And the Russia notes this as well. So our practice at the Beis Din of America is that when a case gets converted into a Zabla, we point out that not everybody is qualified to serve as a dayan. There are some people who, if it's very clear that a person is going to be an advocate and the person has a reputation that either they're a Tohen or a Dayan, they're sort of interchangeable. Half of the time they serve as an advocate for somebody, and then when the case gets turned into a Din Torah, they become a Dayan all of a sudden. We don't consider that to be acceptable. We don't consider that's not a Din Torah. That's not a proper Beis Din. A proper Beis Din or Zabla, the Rosh points out, is that the Borer is not supposed to serve as an advocate. If you know that the Borer is going to serve as an advocate, then this person is not really qualified to serve as a Dayan in the case. So one of the problems that we deal with at the Beis Din is trying to put together these Zablas in cases where parties can't agree on a Din Torah. So if the parties can't, on a Beis Din, if the parties can't agree on a particular Beis Din, there are two things that can happen, really. First of all, if a person says, I'm not going to your Beis Din, I'm not going to any Beis Din, so obviously then the halacha is that the party who brought the case is within the parameters described by Rav Schechter, the other party is allowed to take him to court. There may be certain situations as well where they can't agree on a Beis Din, and then it's supposed to turn into a Zabla, but the other side says, either I don't believe in going to a Zabla because I think I have to, that only my Beis Din, only the Beis Din that I chose is a Beis Din that I'm prepared to submit to, which he doesn't have the right to do. When we say Hochen l'Aka Mokam HaNitpa, it generally means you go after the place where the Nitpa is located. It doesn't mean the place in New York, but in New York you have many Batei Din. So each Beis Din is the Mokam HaNitpa. So he doesn't have the right to say that. And if he says if he agrees to, in principle, to go to a Zabla, but doesn't come up with a Dayan who's kosher, so then there's a very strong argument. There's a very strong argument, I'll put it that way, to say that the person may not necessarily be obligated to submit to a Beis Din under those circumstances. So those are some of the jurisdictional issues that you have to deal with at the Beis Din. There may be other cases where a person has a valid taina that he doesn't really have to go to Beis Din. What's a classic case? Really, we say, when do you have to go to Beis Din? When you have a dispute between two Jews. But not in every single case is the dispute really between two Jews. Like, for example, sometimes you have a case where there's most of the cases that come in front of the Beis Din are cases involving, shall we say, like the Gemara says, hodos vehalvos. You have loan transactions between people, you have poalim, you have tenant-landlord disputes, you have workers who get into disputes with the people who hire them. Most of the cases are not torts. What's a tort? Most of you aren't lawyers. A tort is, as I said, somebody breaks a leg or something like that. We don't hear too many cases like that. Why is that? Because in most tort cases where a person breaks a limb, or you go after somebody for malpractice or something like that, people, the defendants, usually are covered by insurance. They usually have insurance policies. So when the plaintiff in the case is going, if they're going to collect any money at the end, the money is not going to be paid by the defendant. It's going to be paid by the insurance company. And if the insurance company is the one that's really on the line, and the insurance company is not a Jewish entity, and the insurance company is not prepared to submit to a Beis Din because they say, we know the court system, but we don't know the Beis Din system, so we're not going to cover our policy in the Beis Din system, then in such a case, a defendant may very well have the right to say, by Bleich writes this in one of his recent articles, may have the right to say that I'm not really the party in interest over here. It's my insurance company that's the party. They're the ones that would be on the line to pay, and therefore I prefer to defend this case in secular court. We had a couple of interesting cases in Beis Din where people tried to get the defendant in the case said, I'm prepared to pay whatever the amount is and not rely on the insurance company. So that if they really could show they have the money and the money is available, then that's a valid claim for a defendant to require the case to be in secular court. Or where we had a case where the insurance company where the defendant wanted the case to be in secular court, and the defendant was able to or tried to demonstrate before the Beis Din that the insurance company was prepared to adhere to the decision of the Beis Din. So if the insurance company will adhere to the decision of the Beis Din, obviously it doesn't have to go to secular court in such a case. What about with respect to non-Jews? There is a shita, there's a tashbeis, I think, who says that if a Jew has a dispute against a non-Jew, non-Jews also are subject to halachos. Maybe you'll apply dinin de malchus adina, but who says that it shouldn't be a Beis Din to adjudicate the case? You should also should take the non-Jew to Beis Din. So we don't generally assume that way. We assume if you have a case against the non-Jew, you can go to secular court. But certainly there's nothing wrong with taking a non-Jew to Beis Din or vice versa if the parties are willing. We had one case in the Beis Din where we had a major national bank, and the major national bank had a $100 million claim against somebody from the Orthodox Jewish community. And they felt this was somebody who they wouldn't be able to easily collect from. Even with a $100 million judgment, the person had their money in so many different places that they felt that the person wouldn't really, they wouldn't be able to collect anyway. But they felt that if there was a Beis Din, they would be able to have a little bit more influence over a collection. At least they were under that impression. So they brought the case to the Beis Din. This is a major bank. They brought a $100 million case to the Beis Din. I remember they flew me out to California to hear this case between the bank and this individual, and the Beis Din handled the case. I won't go into the final resolution, but it was a very interesting matter. So sometimes we can take care of cases involving non-Jewish entities as well. Now, what about in terms of what if the parties say we want to, what if they stipulate that they both agree to go to court? So Shulchan Aruch discusses this, says the parties don't have a right to stipulate to go to court. That's a violation of Ve'ela Mishpatim. Even if both parties say they want to go to court, they have no right to both stipulate to go to court. There was, now what about the choice of law provisions? So let me just discuss this for a few minutes. The choice of law. So we say generally speaking, obviously, the law that's implemented in any kind of Din Torah case is halacha. That's why you go to Beis Din. You said that one of the Rashi's comments at the beginning of Parshas Mishpatim is that we're not supposed to make it look like our laws are incapable of responding to day-to-day situations, as if it's a chilul Hashem. If we say our laws are inadequate, they have to go to we have to follow the laws of the Ovdei Avodah Zarah of the secular nations. So really, obviously, you're supposed to apply halacha and not a separate legal system. What if there's a general agreement that between the parties that you're going to accept a different legal system? So in Eretz Yisrael, when the early years of the Medina, this was one of the issues. What if you have Jewish courts made up completely of Jewish people, but they just decide that everybody in the country, or the courts in the country, and the whole population in the country decide that they're going to accept a legal system which is not Jewish law? It's a mixture of Turkish law, British law, whatever, but it's not Jewish law per se. So if everyone accepts it upon themselves, so is this a violation? So at the time, the major poskim at the time wrote about this, the Chazon Ish, the Hechel Yitzchak, Isaac Herzog, the Hechel Yitzchak, and others all wrote very, very strongly that this is a basic violation of the halacha if you say that you're going to cast Torah aside and you're just going to accept for all purposes, in all cases, you're going to accept the secular legal system. Obviously, you can't do that. But what about in an individual case? What about if in one individual case, the parties say that in this case, we're going to make a Tanai? We know we have a principle called Tanai Shema Momon Kayim. You can make a condition with respect to monetary matters. And the people say, we know in this particular case, we're going to accept Jewish law. We're going to accept the New York law. We want New York law to govern. They have a contract which says, we'll go to the Beis Din of America. We'll go to a Beis Din of Zabla. But we want that Beis Din to follow New York law with respect to our transaction. So this is a somewhat contested issue, I think. And one that the Beis Din of America has to deal with, and the position that we've taken on this, so you'll find this distinction, I think, in the Knesset HaGdola and a few other places, is that there's a distinction between accepting a separate legal system and accepting a particular law or a particular legal outcome for a particular case that the parties are comfortable with. So if the parties would, for example, look at the legal system and say, I see what the law is today. I don't know what the law is going to be tomorrow. I'm happy with what the law is today, and I would like that to govern this contract between the two of us. If the law changes tomorrow, maybe I wouldn't accept that. I'm not accepting the legal system. I just like the way it is today. So if they say we're accepting New York law as of the date hereof, they're not really accepting a separate legal system. They're accepting a particular legal outcome that they're comfortable with respect to this transaction. It's not a complete disavowal of the halakhic legal system. So in such a case, we would apply the principle called Tanai Shema Mamon Kayim. On the other hand, if the people said that we're just accepting upon ourselves this separate legal system regardless of how it's going to change, whether we like it or not, we just think that we can rely more on this legal system. We don't know what it's going to be 10 years from now, but whatever it's going to be, even if it's different from today, we'll accept it. Then that's not, that already is much, let me put it this way, it's much more questionable. I think you may even find some postmen who would say if it's in an individual case as opposed to the court, the Beis Din's general practice, maybe they could do it, but we try to be machmir about that scenario as well. Also, we have, as I mentioned in the context of the jurisdiction of the panel you appear in front of, we mentioned that there are minhag hasochem issues. A Beis Din has to know whenever you deal with people from a particular industry or a particular business, you have to know what the customs and practices are of that business. That's one of the reasons why, if you look at our Beis Din, we have people who are rabbanim and people who are lawyers and people with business experience as well, because you have to really be in tune with what goes on in the general world and what the practices are. If you don't know yourself, you have to hire an expert and find out in order to really be able to paskin properly, because minhag hasochem is it's not a separate thing, this Torah, and then minhag hasochem is part of secular law. Minhag hasochem is part of Torah law. If you have a case where you which involves merchants, then you have to know the minhag hasochem in order to know what the proper halakha is. Like the Gemara in Bava Metzia, Daf Ayin Daled says that if it's a particular industry where everybody does a kinyan in a way which is not one of the kinyanim accepted in the Torah, they do situmta, which might be a handshake or some other type of kinyan which is not a standard halakha kinyan, but that's the way that everybody does kinyanim in that industry, then you have to know about that in order to be able to properly halakhically recognize that kinyan, which would have ramifications as to whether a person has a particular obligation or doesn't have a particular obligation. So this is part of the responsibility and role of the Beis Din. In terms of the issues of Dina de Malchus Adina, that was covered by Rav Shechter. We have some of the cases where that arises. Our cases, for example, Rav Moshe writes about this, where you have a landlord-tenant dispute that the landlord is violating certain rent control laws. So if you take a look in Rav Moshe's tshuva on this subject, Rav Moshe writes very carefully that it's not necessarily simply the case that we say that Dina de Malchus Adina applies across the board just because this happens to be the government enacted a particular rule. He says, kind of like the Shah, that since everybody who leases and everybody who rents property does so in accordance with the general regulations that are enacted by the government, it's understood that when people enter into a rental arrangement, they're entering into it al tanai with a condition, with the understanding that it's going to be in accordance with this Dina de Malchus Adina. So therefore, you have cases where the Dina de Malchus Adina will become applicable even if people didn't expressly say that they want Dina de Malchus Adina to be applicable just based on the circumstances of the case and what they're involved in. Rav Moshe writes about Dina de Malchus in another context as well, in bankruptcy. If you have somebody who was in bankruptcy and now the creditors want to be able to collect whatever's left from the from the estate of the person who was bankrupt, so Rav Moshe writes that if bankruptcy law establishes who's supposed to collect first and who collects second and who collects third, that we would apply Dina D'Malchus Adina in such a case as well, simply because there too it's understood that everybody who's in business knows that bankruptcy is an option and therefore accepts upon themselves presumably certain aspects of the bankruptcy law. He doesn't talk specifically about, let's say somebody becomes bankrupt, do they then, when they have money again, have to pay their debts? Halachically they would, but according to secular law, they wouldn't. You have the sort of reverse situation. You have some situations where in secular law you still have to pay your debts, and luckily you don't, right? Like after Shemitah, you don't make a principal. But then you have certain situations like with Shemitah, with bankruptcy, where in halacha you still have to pay your debts, and in secular court you don't. So here you have, we've had cases that have been brought to the Bez, and we have one right now where this issue has to be adjudicated. It hasn't been decided yet, but you have a very interesting literature among different poskim saying different things about whether with respect to that rule of that aspect of bankruptcy law, that also would be something that the people accepted upon themselves to forgive a debt. Or maybe there'd be a chiyuv latzeis yedei shemayim. That's an interesting issue as well. The cases that have come before Beis Din generally involve at the outset and in simply the administration of these cases these basic issues of what is the proper forum to hear the case, whether you have to go to Beis Din, you don't have to go to Beis Din, which Beis Din you have to go to, whether you have to do a Zabla, you don't have to do a Zabla, and so forth. And they also involve in every single case that comes before us this other issue of exactly what law do you apply. Is it strict halacha? Is it pshara? Is it secular? Is it minhag ha'sochrim? Is it dina d'malchus adina? These are very basic issues with respect to every single case that comes before the Beis Din. I wanted to just familiarize everybody with some of these basic issues. I'll just say, in conclusion, I think I haven't looked at my watch. I probably went a little bit over time. But I'll just say in conclusion, the Torah at the beginning of Choshen Mishpat, it's a very beautiful preamble to all of Choshen Mishpat. I recommend for all of you to just read the words of the Torah in the Beis Yosef at the beginning of Choshen Mishpat, where the Torah points out that when it says at the end of the first parak of Pirkei Avos that, you know, Shol Shedor Ma'olam Omeid, Al Adin Ma'al Emes Ve'al Shalom, Shedor Emes Mishpat Shalom Shivtu B'Sha'arechem, the Torah asks, this is the quotes of Eder Yonah, that it says at the beginning, Al Torah Ve'al Avodah Ve'al Gemilas Chasadim. So which is it? So he points out that the world was created based on Torah and Avodah and Gemilas Chasadim, but the world is sustained based on Din, based on Emes, and based on Shalom. And he points out as well, really, in the Beis Yosef notes this, that all of these aspects, so Din, Emes, and Shalom, these are all part and parcel of what's supposed to go on in a Beis Din proceeding. The Din is the job of the Dayanim to see to it that it's the proper Din. The Emes is the job of the Edim to testify properly and to testify accurately. And the Shalom is the job of the Bali Din, that the purpose of the whole Din Torah proceeding is to make Shalom, is to create an atmosphere of continuing peace among the Bali Din, that they should have a feeling of closure, that there was the right verdict, and that everything was done properly. And therefore, the orientation of the Dayanim and all parties to the Din Torah process really has to be to provide an atmosphere of continuing Shalom among the litigants and among Klal Yisrael. So to the extent that it can be ensured by a Beis Din, partially through the elimination of Tohanim and other things, that the process is one that fosters a feeling of Shalom and a feeling of Torah integrity, then truly we can be Mekayim, the Maimer in the Gemara, the Kol Dayan Shedon Din Emes Lamitzo, Nasa Shutof in Makadosh Baruch Hu Maaseh Bereishis.